Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmoke. He's Lance Meadow. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to communicate with the show that way. Lance, Giants and Niners. Bob Papa had a great stat. Let me see if I can bring it up here real quick. I'm not sure if he had it in
his competition
notes.
With statistics now all of a sudden.
Bob's number was that, and I'm curious to see if I have it in front of me or if I'm going to have to go off my memory solely. But it's the first time that two teams had a combined one win and were playing each other this late in the year since 1984. Here we go. This is the first time since 1984 that two teams, having played at least eight games, have a combined win total of one or less. 1984, November 4th, the 1-8 Browns played the 0-9 Buffalo Bills. So that is 33
quite some time.
Years since two teams with records this poor met each other this late in the year. That's an amazing stat.
That is an interesting statistic. I'm not surprised that the Browns and the Bills are the two teams that are involved in that matchup. I think what's also interesting, I know this matchup was early in the season, but remember, we had the Giants against the Chargers earlier this year. Both teams were a combined 0-8 in that game, and now we get another game a few weeks later where now both teams have combined for one win. So we've really had two unique matchups this season for the New York Giants.
Well, and if you want to get right down to it, Lance, it's pretty simple. I mean, look at some of the rankings between these two teams. Scoring offense, Giants 28th, Niners 30th. Scoring defense, Niners 31st, Giants 29th.
Something's got to give.
Something's got to give. They're actually tied in turnover differential over the course of the year, too. So this is going to come down to one of those games, to which team can sustain drives, which teams can score in the red zone, which team can protect the football, and it'll be those little things. It'll almost be the battle of, to quote Ben McAdoo, and I'll play something from his press conference in just a little bit here, Lance, who does simple better? As Carl Banks has been saying, who's plays better average football? Who doesn't make those big mistakes that's going to cost you? And that's the team that could very well come out with the victory.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to field position, which has been a huge narrative this season. It's hurt the Giants because the opposition has received gifts and has been able to capitalize. And we saw that front and center against the Rams. The Niners have not been doing well in terms of protecting the football. You brought up red zone. They're 11 of 23 in the red zone this season. That's 23rd in the NFL. So they've had opportunities, 23. The problem is they can rarely cash in. They've had offensive line issues. It's been a game of musical chairs. You got right tackles moving to left tackles. You've got guards and centers trading spots all over the place. And, I mean, we talk about years where the Giants have been plagued by injuries, John. At this point, my question for San Francisco is, who's healthy? Can you tell me who's healthy on this team? Because, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of a situation, but they've had two safeties who replaced one another get put on injured reserve. They've lost their starting left tackle, though interestingly, Joe Staley was limited in practice last week after suffering the eye injury 2 weeks ago. I mean, they've lost personnel across the board. They've lost Pierre Garçon, one of their top wide receivers. It's amazing to me how many players they have shuffled in and out of the lineup. They lost one of their best defensive ends, Eric Armstead. I mean, the laundry list goes on and on.
And oddly enough, the one guy that's managed to stay healthy is someone who hasn't been able to stay healthy throughout his entire career, and that's Carlos Hyde, who's constantly at foot and ankle injuries. He's actually still playing. He's healthy. He's going to play against the Giants on Sunday. He splits carries with Matt Breda a little bit. But if you look at the Niners' offense, that's the weapon the Giants have to be concerned with. They can stop the run and slow down Carlos Hyde with C.J. Beathard at quarterback, you know, barring a unexpected mid-game substitution by Jimmy Garoppolo, which I don't think anybody thinks is going to happen, though you never know. The Giants should be in pretty good shape if they can slow down Hyde.
Absolutely. I mean, the Niners offensively, you went over some of the numbers. They're not lighting up the scoreboard. They've only scored 30 points in each of their last three games combined. Now, with that being said, prior to that, they went through a five-game stretch where they lost every single game by a field goal or less. So they've been competitive. It's misleading to look at the Niners' record, just like we have analyzed the Giants' record from last season. You can't just go by record alone. You have to look at the games. They've played a lot of close games.
In fact, I'll give them to you, Lance, real quick. Yeah. Week 2, 12-9 loss at Seattle. Week 3, 41-39 loss to the Rams. Week 4, an 18-15 loss at Arizona. Week 5, a 26-23 loss at Indianapolis. And week 6, a 26-24 loss at Washington. So those games all decided by 3 points or fewer, all 5 losses.
And I believe, if memory serves me correct, two of them were overtime, or at least one of them was overtime. So when you take that into consideration, they've gone down to the wire. They've been hanging around with other teams.
How many of those games, though, and I don't know the answer to this, had Hoyer as the starting quarterback?
Well, that's a good question. Let's see. Beathard took over as the starting quarterback. I could tell you right now, in terms of based on the starts, Hoyer was still there for that Arizona game midway
through
the season.
Okay, so that means for the first three close games, it was Hoyer. How about at Indianapolis in game number five?
Center. Hoyer was there.
Okay,
the Indianapolis,
so that's number five.
Game.
Now go at Washington.
Redskins game,
Beathard
was his first start.
Okay, so
they took over
four
Washington.
Of those six, or I should say four of those five close games, it was Hoyer.
It was a different quarterback.
Correct. Okay, that's fair.
The
but
last three
games,
said,
by the way, 40-10, 33-10, 20-10.
That was the new quarterback, and he's a young quarterback.
Yep.
Hoyer's a more polished veteran. They've also, in fairness, a lot of the injuries have been suffered over the last few games since Beathard took over. So
absolutely.
You have to take that into consideration as well, and they've also been plagued by turnovers and mishaps. But the last thing you want to do is, and that's why I thought you brought up a great point off the top, John, when you talked about field position. This, to me, is a game. The last thing you want to do is give gifts to the Niners. You turn the ball over. You have a fumble in your own side of the field, and you give the Niners less than half the field to have to go. This is when all of a sudden a game that should be comfortable, even on paper, starts to get very interesting. And that's where I think the Giants need to be extremely careful. They went up against a much more dynamic team last Sunday in the Rams. But what they also did, which didn't help their cause, is they were -3 in turnover differential. You had two fumbles, you had an interception, and then also special teams hurt you in terms of the block punt. Those things cannot happen against a Niners team that is not scoring nearly as many points as the Rams are. Rams are the number one offense in the NFL. Now you're going up against basically the 32nd overall offense, or offense that's ranked right near the bottom.
24th in yardage.
They are 24th in yardage.
30th in score.
But the 30th for scoring is obviously what I put a lot more stock in. And you just don't want to give them red zone opportunities where they have two plays and they all of a sudden can get into the end zone. And the other thing to watch out for is, even though their passing game is far from prolific because of the injuries to their receiving core, Carlos Hyde can still easily run for 100 yards. He's more than capable of doing that. And the Giants, has been well documented, have had trouble stopping the run. If I'm San Francisco, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I think the first area they're going to turn to is they're going to turn to the running game. And they're going to try to get C.J. Beathard in manageable third downs. They're going to try to pound the rock. And then maybe work some of their tight ends in and some of their other young receivers, because, you know, they lost their starting tight end last week. Garcon was put on IR 2 weeks ago. They're shuffling in new receivers for C.J. Beathard, and he's relatively new running this offense. So, you know, it's a lot of new things that are at the forefront here in the passing game. I would think they're going to try to get things going on the ground, as most of the Giants' opponents have done throughout this season.
Now, let's talk about the Giants specifically, because they obviously have a lot of work to do. They're trying to reset things, and Ben McAdoo was asked very simply kind of what his message to the team was to get ready for this game, to get back on the winning track, and he gave a really expansive answer. There were a couple of follow-ups to that question, so I'm going to play that for you now. It'll be Ben McAdoo's answer as to what his message to the team was. And then again, we have some follow-ups, about 4 minutes of audio from his press conference yesterday. I thought you guys should hear it before we take your calls at 201-939-4513. And by the way, Sean O'Hara will be joining us at 12:45 to talk a little Giants football as well. So here is Ben McAdoo at the press conference yesterday.
All right, I talked to the team about getting back to our identity. Sound smart and tough, to committed to discipline and poise. That's something I haven't been talking enough about. And we got back to it. Talked to him about, we're disappointed with where we are. We're not discouraged with where we are. Everything's fixable. We have a lot of pride. We have a lot of fight in that room. And they responded as well. We talked about doing simple better. We hit that before.
He had the notes.
We made an increased emphasis this week. Coaches, asked the coaches to come up with a sound plan this week. Sound plan, doing simple better, to teach and demand. Asked the players to study the plan. Prepare, do a good job studying it, prepare this week, and be ready to go out and perform at a high level. Ask the Frasers in the group to lead. If they need me for any reason, I'm available to them.
That would be Frasier the
Ask
Lion,
the
by
if
the
players,
way.
The young players.
Important to know.
Step up. It's time for them to grow up and be men. You know, Sterling Shepard is a guy that comes to mind. Evan Engram, Dalvin Tomlinson, all played at a high level for us so far this year. Even Avery Moss last week. They're young players who can step up and help us lead. Talked about, let's begin again. That was really the message for him. You know, don't buy into the lies that your feelings are telling you. You know, this thing's not about feelings. It's a decision. And let's make the decision to begin again. We talked about, you know, may think I'm a little bit out there, but I believe we have a run in us. I believe to the core we have a run in us. We have to be hungry. We have to get our football right. We have to be disciplined, be where we're supposed to be, when we're supposed to be there, do it as well as we possibly can and do it all the time. And it's between our ears. You know, we in the locker room, if you're in a pro locker room, whether you're a player or whether you're a coach, the word legacy shows up quite a bit. It's important to all these guys, and it all starts between the ears. So that was the message to the players.
Ben, if you have a run in you, I mean, what is the end goal of that run? 500?
Win. And we could start this week. I believe we have a run in this. Like I said, I like this team. They haven't flinched. They haven't blinked. You know, we set our jaws. We had we had another great day of practice. I look forward to playing again on Sunday, and I believe we have a run in us.
When you say present this kind of,
Paul
sounds
Schwartz,
like a more upbeat message maybe to the team, mm-hmm. You know, when you look at them, what do you sense? You know, do you sense that they're just listening, that they buy into it? I mean, you can't tell yet, obviously, but what's your initial sense when you, what you're selling?
You know, I have all eyes on me. You know, they're receptive. The players are receptive. You know, they're probably thinking of a couple different things. You know, when I go into a meeting like that, if each guy takes one thing, then it's mission accomplished. Wanted to let them know I'm there for them. Anything they need that I can do to help them is their leader. I'm behind them, and I still believe.
Ben, is some of this more – I mean, you know, your job is a lot of things, X's and O's and, you know, other things. But do you think
– Paul Schwartz again.
You know, this week especially, it's more than the X's and O's. You know, it's about, you know, getting them to buy in and believe. And like you said – go against what the human nature is telling them.
Well, yeah, they need to believe in themselves. They need to trust themselves. You know, the players know what works. Players know what got them seats in the room. They know a lot of the questioning comes from, you know, sometimes it happens before the game film is even watched. So when someone's questioning you who hasn't watched the game film and they're not in the room, they need to make sure they understand that, you know, the biggest critics are going to be the critics you trust that are inside the room watching the film together. That's where the corrections need to come from.
How tough was it to watch Sunday's film then when you guys did get together and watch it?
We couldn't wait to get together and watch it. You know, we have Mondays off, and then you have to sit on it for a day. So you want to get in there Tuesday morning and jump on it right away, have a chance to, you know, set your feelings, set your emotions aside and jump on the tape.
That was Dan Duncan,
Be honest. Be straightforward, plain talk, straight talk, and make sure we get everything fixed and move on.
What was the players' reaction, in your estimation, when you saw them watch the film in that game?
They were looking for corrections. They were looking for feedback. They want to get better.
Take one more.
Pat Hanlon.
Talk about going on a run. I mean, how urgent is it to start that
Rock.
Run now, this week?
Yeah, it's right now. Right now. One game this week. Let's go win it.
And that's what the Giants are trying to do on Sunday against the 49ers. Ben McAdoo trying to search for something to get his team on the right track. And Lance, it's kind of what we talked about at the start of the show. He's getting back to fundamentals, the type of things that they stressed in the year. You know, tackling, ball control, being poised, fundamentally sound, playing hard. And when you're 1-7, those are the things that you have to get right before you can start worrying about a lot of the other stuff that people are concerned with.
Yeah, they had talked about the defense maybe being a little bit too complex, so they want to get to simplifying it where guys just play how they want to play and they don't have to worry about these convoluted matchups and everything to that nature. I know when Landon Collins spoke to the media, he was referencing how the Seahawks play defense with their cover three, and he was referencing that, you know, they just go out there, they play to their strengths, and the Giants are getting back to what they had done perhaps a little bit of last season when they were winning those games. So that is, I think, something that they've been toying with, at least in the meeting rooms.
And that's something Ben McAdoo mentioned, how he wanted his coaches to put together an effective but a simple plan so that it doesn't get overcomplicated. I know the one quote out there from Landon was that I think, you know, we get to get back to playing cover two. It's not cover two. The cover two is, you know, a zone defense where the corner stays short. You have two safeties deep. He just meant playing two high safeties, which means two safeties deep. And then, frankly, the Giants play mostly man-to-man. And one of the reasons why, Lance, they haven't been able to play that two high safety this year is pretty simple. In fact, there's two very simple reasons. One, how'd the team do stopping the run earlier this year with just seven guys in the box? not too good.
Rough the last time I checked.
So he had to bring his safety down to help.
Yeah.
Number two, how have the Giants been getting pressure on the quarterback with just their front four?
13 sacks on the season.
Not too good. So you have to blitz a lot more. What happens when you blitz? What happens when you have to bring safeties to stop the run? You can't play two safeties high. It goes back to what we've talked about the last 2 years about the Giants' offense. Teams against them playing that too high safety look. Why? Because they could get pressure with their front four because the Giants' offensive line struggled in the pass protection.
And they could have run the football.
And the Giants could have run the football. So it's the opposite for the defense. So I don't think you can just get back to, oh, we're going to do this. You still got a million injuries here on defense, too. Vernon's back at practice. You know, we'll see if he can play this week. We'll see how effective he can be. You hope Jonathan Casillas is back. We'll see. Those burners can be tricky things. B.J. Goodson isn't practicing. So you're still missing guys on defense, too, in terms of injuries. So these are all things you have to take advantage of as you move forward here in the season.
Well, you brought up an interesting point. It reminded me of listening to Kyle Shanahan's press conference the other day, John, and, you know, the Niners and the Giants' offenses are both struggling. Shanahan mentioned they've been run blitzed more so than he's ever seen in his career as an offensive coordinator this year. But what he said was, we haven't made anybody pay. I'm not paraphrasing. Those are his exact words, meaning we need to get them to stop run blitzing.
And how do you do that?
Got to be more effective on offense.
Throw the ball
down
the field.
Correct. All right, you want to come after us? Then C.J. Beathard needs to get a 15-yard pass off. And he says we haven't been doing that. So we haven't given opposing defenses a reason to change what they're doing. It's very similar to what the Giants are seeing this season. If the Giants aren't consistent in terms of big plays down the field, consistent in terms of their running game, why are defenses, defensive coordinators in which they study the film, why are they saying to themselves, boy, we need to tweak this, we need to change that? No, they're comfortable in using their game plan throughout the contest because the Giants have not made opposing teams pay consistently. The Niners are in the same exact boat. These teams are essentially mirror images of one another, just like we were talking about leading up to that Week 5 matchup between the Chargers and the Giants when both teams were 0-4.
201-939-4513. Let's get to your calls now because, once again, we'll have Sean O'Hara at 12:45. So we got 25 minutes of your calls. Let's do it. Ty in Maryland, he'll lead us off. Hi, Ty. How are you?
What's going on, guys?
Doing well, Ty. What's up?
All right. Let's get down to business. I want to put to rest all the rumblings about Eli Manning being done. Okay, now I know that Ben McAdoo said in his press conference after the Rams debacle that he was considering Davis Webb. Now, I know that you guys were talking earlier in the week about Davis Webb maybe seeing some playing time. If we get maybe a large margin of points, win or lose, we might see Davis Webb sometime in this season. But let's be honest, guys. I mean, first of all, we're fans of the game. Second of all, we're men and we know the game of football. Eli Manning is far from finished. Okay, now you have the best quarterbacks in the league overthrowing open receivers, especially when they have happy feet in the pocket. You know, it's not really Eli's fault.
No, but Ty, you're right. It's not Eli's fault, and I agree he's not done. But at the same time, you have to understand that he probably only has, you know, a few years left. He is 37 years old. Not many quarterbacks are effective after the age of 40. There are exceptions to the rule, obviously, but it's a very difficult thing to do. So I think when you talk about trying to see Davis Webb, it's not a commentary that Eli can't play now and he can't play anymore. You're just trying to get an idea of what you have in Davis Webb, especially when you get to the draft next spring. The Giants have the chance to perhaps have a top pick. You want to have a feel for what you have in Davis Webb before you get into that draft. So by giving Davis Webb some time is not necessarily a commentary at all, quite frankly, about where Eli Manning is. You're just trying to figure out things for the future when he's eventually gone because of age, not because of lack of effectiveness. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. So let's talk about the draft then.
Sure.
If I can. I don't want to jump the line any, but let's talk the draft. Honestly, I don't know. I don't think anyone knows what Davis Webb can do, but I didn't hear too much about him in college, and maybe that's because I didn't do my research. But in my opinion, I know, like I said, I haven't seen much of him. But I just don't think that he has it. I don't.
Well, you know, Ty, here's the thing. Ty, here's the thing on Davis Webb, and I was asked the same exact question by one of the radio affiliates that I did an interview with the other day. Here's the deal with Davis Webb. He has all the physical tools you want out of a quarterback. He's tall. He's got a good frame. He can make every throw. He's got a really good arm. Mentally, he's smart. He works hard. He's one of the last guys here every day. So he has all the tools, mental and physical. I take it back. That's the one thing that he's not. He's not extremely mobile. You're right about that. But Ty, hold on. Let me finish. Let me finish my point. But there,
kind of cut me off, but it's okay.
Ty, I'm the host of the show. I'm going to do what I want. How about that?
That's kind of rude for you to say.
Ty, are you asking a question? I'm trying to give you my answer. Let me finish my full answer. You stopped me in the middle of my answer. But all those tools don't mean anything if you can't translate that to the field when you're in a game. So even though, like, Brandon Whedon had all the arm tools in the world, he looked like he was going to be a great quarterback in practice. When he got on the field, he couldn't do it. That's why it's important to get him into games to see what he can do in game situations. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Now finish your point, Ty. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, I wanted to know what you guys thought about Baker Mayfield. That's all.
Baker Mayfield, you know what? I'll be honest, Ty. I have not seen a ton of him this year. We're traveling a lot on Saturdays when we play road games and things like that. It's hard. I know he's considered more of a mobile quarterback. He's not necessarily a pocket passer. I think he is good enough arm strength to play in the pros from what I've seen. Most people, from what I've read, consider him a second, third round type of pick. I know some people have him as a first rounder. I still think the jury's kind of out on that. But I admit that's based on what other people have said. I have not watched enough of him myself to give you an educated opinion. Okay?
Yeah, I urge everybody listening, as a matter of fact, you guys and everybody listening, to just take a close look at him as well as Bo Scarborough out of Alabama, and that's all.
Ty, thank you for the call, and I apologize for jumping on you a little bit. That was my fault. I apologize.
You know, the other thing is you don't have to take a quarterback necessarily in the first round to find a quarterback to be successful. We've seen a number of examples over the last few years.
Your odds are a lot better if you do.
Your odds are, but I think that the mindset is that you have to move up or you got to take a guy with the number one overall pick to find the franchise quarterback is not necessarily true for every single team in terms of how they've gone with their game plan. I understand that the percentages are a little bit higher, but, you know, I mean, a guy like Baker Mayfield, who I've seen, you know, plenty of, especially this season. You know, he is a much more mobile quarterback than most. I mean, I think he's got a strong arm. He's an intense competitor, I'll tell you that. I mean, that's the other thing that stands out. I think the maturity questions are going to be something that teams are going to have to look into because of his past and, you know, whether or not his study habits and everything else is in line with how he performs on the field. But, you know, somebody like that could very well turn out to be good value if he does fall into the second round, depending on how the projections play out. I wouldn't necessarily overlook a guy like that. And, you know, I mean, understand, you know, Dak Prescott's are not showing up everywhere every single year in the fourth round, but there have been a number of quarterbacks who have taken advantage of their opportunities when they've been taken in the mid to late rounds of the drafts.
And absolutely.
Depending on the system, you know, they can flourish.
No question. But if you also look at the quarterbacks that have gone to Pro Bowls over the last 10 years, high percentage of them were first-round picks.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And you look at Carson Wentz, what's happened with him. But then again, you know, DeShone Kizer, I understand he wasn't a guy that was as high. But, you know, Cleveland took him, in my opinion, relatively high. And he hasn't necessarily turned out to be what they had hoped for. Sample size is still very small. You know, Teddy Bridgewater got banged up. He was a late first-round pick. We'll see how the rest of his career plays out. So, I mean, I still think he got examples across the board, even guys that have gone later on in the first round.
Right. But obviously, your percentages go up if you're going to pick a guy higher in the draft. That's just the math of that.
Well,
the issue.
Real quickly, before we go back to the lines, that's why I think there is value if Davis Webb does get in late in games that are, you know, decided at that point, just to get an idea of how he handles a regular season contest so that you enter next year's draft and you know perhaps how he can handle the environment of a regular season game as opposed to a preseason game. But with that being said, John, it's important to note you're still not going to have all of the answers to all of the questions that they may have before the draft comes up. you know, if he gets in one game, if he gets in two, let's say he gets into the final three games
late
in the fourth
quarter. Five games, you're still not good enough.
You're still not going to say, oh, well, you know what, we've seen enough that we don't need to look at a quarterback, or, you know, we're satisfied with this, but we're not satisfied with that. There's still going to be plenty of questions that are going to loom coming out of this season, no matter how much playing time he gets.
And by the way, if you wind up with two good quarterbacks,
it's a good problem,
guess what?
Kev.
There are a lot of teams that will line up to make a trade to get one of your two good quarterbacks, by
absolutely,
the way.
Absolutely, yeah.
But a lot of teams.
No, I agree with you. That's why I said it's a good problem to have. But
correct.
The other thing that can't be overlooked is, you know, quarterback's a big part of the discussion. We don't know what the Giants are going to do in free agency with respect to some of their pending free agents. I'm not talking about guys that are going to be on the market. You know, Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg, what they determine there, you know, that changes the conversation about maybe the urgency to bring in an offensive lineman
the
first
there
round.
There isn't any guarantee a quarterback's a pick in the first
correct.
Round. Absolutely
so
not.
So that can't – you have to – my point is that has to be a part of the conversation.
Sure.
You want to start to speculate about what direction the Giants need to go in the draft.
I'm with you on that. 201-939-4513. Mike from North Bergen. He's up next. Hi, Mike.
Yo, what's going on, Schmoke? What's going on, Meadows? How you fellas doing?
What up, Mike? Good to hear from you, pal. What's going on?
Yo, Schmoke, this coach has got to catch the first flight back to Green Bay, man. I'm sorry, but, I mean, how much more pathetic and embarrassing can you sound and look like? I mean, give me a break. This guy's really making us look real silly out here, fellas, for real. I mean, he's having a hard time calling plays. He's having a hard time controlling the players. He's not real good with the media. He comes out with all these boring cliches over and over again. Oh, yeah, we had a good practice. I'm tired of hearing all the excuses and all that nonsense. We need somebody in here that's going to light a fire underneath these guys' asses and play some true blue, big blue football. I don't want to see none of this garbage anymore. That was an embarrassment, all right? I'm a Giants fan living out here in Atlanta, Georgia right now, and I got to be embarrassed talking about my team. And I shouldn't feel like that. I should be prideful. I used to be prideful talking about my team.
Hey, look, Mike.
And now it's a comedy show.
No, Mike, look. No one will disagree, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. That has been a very, very rough year. Nobody will argue that. You give a 51 points in any game. The players in the locker room after the game said, yeah, they were embarrassed by it, okay? I get that. You got to go out. You got to play better. You got to win games. As to the coach, that'll be a decision that ownership and people with way more important jobs than we have will make at the end of the year.
And that is something that, you know, they will have to look at in terms of probably after the season as opposed to right now in the middle. I've said this again. You know, changes have happened with even coordinators, John. If you look at NFL history, it's very rare that that's made much of an impact even on a team.
No.
I mean, Jim Caldwell's the one guy that comes to mind when he took over as the offensive coordinator for Cam Cameron in Baltimore when the Ravens got things going and then went on the Super Bowl run. Outside of that, Bills have made changes. Dolphins have made changes. Hasn't necessarily changed things. The other thing, though, that I wanted to comment on that the last caller brought up, you don't win games in the media. You don't win games based on sound bites. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I understand you want to hear that rah-rah motivational tool, and there's a lot of comparisons to what Tom Coughlin did. And Tom Coughlin was a very unique speaker, and how he handled the media was completely different than people that are going to come in after him. But Bill Belichick is extremely boring when it comes to interacting with the media, and I don't see them impacted on the field as a result of him not putting on a dog and pony show. So the one thing I will say
same
is
same thing with Mike Tomlin,
correct.
Same thing with Jason Garrett, and goes down the list.
Sound bites, media interactions are not synonymous with wins and losses on the football field. And I think that we get caught up in too much of that because people get tired of talking about the X's and O's, that it's a convenient narrative, but there really is no association between the two.
Ronald in Virginia, he's up next. Hi, Ronald. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Good to talk to you fellas, finally.
Good to talk to you,
too,
Ronald.
Every single day.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Ronald, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I just want to talk about Jerry Reese and Ben and McAdoo. They're coming back, Giants fans. So, you know, and I like the positive spin that you guys always put on stuff. But the thing I like about the Giants organization is that they really don't listen to most of the negative fans. You know, there's a lot of positive fans like me out here. You know, you got to give McAdoo time. This is his second year. He was a rookie coach last year. He won 11 games. You know, look what happened to Todd Bowles. Last year, the media, or I should say most of the media on the radio, wanted him fired. They didn't even want him to last the end of the season. Now they want him to get an extension. You know, you got to give your coach time. And when it comes to Jerry Reese, the man won two Super Bowls for us. You know, there's a lot of – he done a lot more good things than bad things when it came to the Giants organization. You got to give the man time. Well, last year, I mean, he could have won Executive of the Year for all the moves that he made. You know, this year is a bad season.
You know, Ron, that's funny. I didn't think about that. But if you actually compare Todd Bowles' first year to his second year and then McAdoo's first year to his second year, there's actually – it's actually not that bad in terms of comparing the two, in terms of how the first year went, where I think the both teams probably overachieved a little bit, and I think in the second year where both teams have underachieved a bit. You know what I mean? Now Bowles has bounced back a little bit in his third season.
Yeah, I think that's a fair parallel, and also the media scrutiny, I think, is also similar in terms of being in the same New York market. But, you know, it's all about how patient an organization is to go through the ups and downs of what a young head coach has to deal with. Because, you know, much like Ben McAdoo, Todd Bowles, if you want to use the Jets comparison, you know, Bowles was a coordinator for many years, was an interim coach briefly with the Dolphins. But, you know, the Jets was his first opportunity to now out to become a head coach, just like McAdoo was a coordinator, was a positional coach, and then all of a sudden he got the green light to become a head coach.
Except so that wasn't Bowles an interim head coach?
Correct.
Somewhere?
Yeah, it was with Miami.
Right, exactly,
Miami,
right,
he was
right,
the interim coach. Yeah, but that was a brief stint. That was not
only
a very
a couple
long
games,
stint.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the Giants, they're going to be fine. You know, just get them, you know, see what happens next year. You know, like I said, Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo, they'll be back next year because that's how the Giants operate. And one more thing, like 3 years ago, I loved the Finding Giants on the NFL Network. I mean, I have a lot more respect for, you know, the people that go out there, the scouts that go out there, you know, over like 200 days out of the year. They do the scouting and stuff, and then we call up and say they don't have no idea what they're talking about, you know. So I really have respect for them when they go out there and do their work.
All right.
Appreciate the
good
phone call,
stuff, Ronald.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thanks so much,
call,
Ronald.
Buddy. And look, I know we're – it's a little early for draft analysis.
Extremely early.
Can we at least wait for the college season to be over?
Yes,
and
extremely
early. And I understand fans being excited, given how bad the season's been, that you're looking forward to the draft. I get it. I understand. And if you're at home and you want to watch college football to scout, I'm with you. Go for it. Cool. But, guys, I got to be honest. Just time restraints on my part. I don't have time to watch. I barely have time to watch all the NFL stuff I want to watch over the course of the week. You know, once we get into January and February, we can start doing some college stuff. I'll start watching college tape, and we can go through it all. But it's just a little bit early right now.
Well, and the other thing is stocks of players go up and down even over the course of a season.
Jalen Smith is going to be the top pick in the draft until he popped his, you know, ACL and tore his nerve up in the bowl game. So, yeah, things change.
So that's more of a reason why, you know, speculating now on who's going to be the top three picks is probably bound to change in the span of the next 2 months and then by the time we get to the NFL draft. But the last caller, I think, was referring to more of a big picture philosophy and, you know, also was referring to the program Finding Giants. And if many of the listeners are not aware, that was something that aired on the NFL Network, which was sort of like Hard Knocks, but it focused not on the team and the players. It focused on the scouting department, followed the guys around the country during the collegiate season and provided insight in terms of how they go about their business, how you have a scout assigned to every region of the country. So that aired, I think, about 2 years ago, if I'm correct, because I believe that was when they were scouting, or maybe even longer, because I think they were looking at Weston Richburg in that program, if memory serves me correct. So it may have been a little bit even further back.
Yeah, and if you Google search it, you will find some excerpts from Finding Giants. It looks like it was fall 2014 when it came out, and a little bit maybe spring 2015. So they think they followed it from 2014 to 2015, because weren't they doing it the year Beckham got drafted?
I believe they were.
So that would have been 2014, right?
Yeah, he was drafted 2014.
Correct.
But for some reason, I remember seeing, I thought there was a clip of Richburg in the Senior Bowl from one of the episodes. I could be mistaken, but that's what I remember.
Well, yeah, Richburg,
so
wasn't Richburg the second-round pick the year Beckham got picked? Am I wrong about that?
No, I think you're right about that.
Yeah,
so that's why.
I'm just saying,
putting our memories together,
Yes. I
think that 2014 makes
correct
a lot of sense.
I agree.
In terms of that being
so
the
they probably filmed it in 2013, 14, and it got released end of 14, beginning of 15 would be my bet. And that's kind of how it went. That would be my bet.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, Richburg, second-round pick in 14 behind Beckham.
201-939-4513. All right, guys, we got 8-9 more minutes of calls, and we got to clear the lines for O'Hara. So we'll take the three guys we have on the line, and then we'll get to Sean. Let's go to Drew in Virginia. He's up next. Hi, Drew.
John, hey, Lance. How you guys doing?
Good
today,
to hear your
man
voice, Drew. How are you, buddy?
Good, good. Man, it's crazy that we're talking about draft choices now, but it says where we are.
I understand.
Team.
Trust me, I get it.
I got a couple of things real quick, man. But first and foremost, man, Giants versus San Francisco. I haven't looked at San Fran, but what is their record? Are they just as bad as the Giants?
They're
right?
Winless. I will once again give the stat I gave at the start of the show for the people.
Let me say this real quick.
Go ahead.
I didn't hear the first part of the show.
And
I came
fine.
In late.
And that's okay, Drew. Here we go.
Well, they're 0-9, just to tell you.
This is the first time since 1984 that two teams, having played at least 8 games each, have a combined win total of 1 or less. November 8th, 1984. The 1-8 Browns beat the Bills, who are 0-9, 13-10. So there you go. It's been 33 years.
That's just pathetic. Okay, here's my thing, okay? I kind of feel like this, okay? I feel like we should win this game, but I'm going to tell you this right now. It kind of goes to my other point right here. If we lose this game, and I guess I could, you know, we could say probably depending on how we lose, this is going to tell me a lot about this team, man, and where we are as a team.
I agree with that.
Because I kind of feel like, you know, we should win this game right here. You know, I know we got to go to San Francisco, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I know we got to travel, but to me, in my opinion, this is a winnable game. But if the Giants go into San Francisco and stink it up, I'm going to tell you flat out right now, it's my heart of heart opinion. I honestly will feel, not that I don't feel this way now, that McAdoo has lost his team. I mean, I don't know what's going on in the locker room. You know, you're starting to hear all of these discipline issues coming out of the locker room. And now anonymous Giants are saying, you know, McAdoo has lost the team, blase, blase, this and this and that. I don't know what's going on, but I can't remember a time seeing anything like this. This is just pathetic. And so from that standpoint, I think management really will have to take a look at that whole thing. Also to include Reese's job, because my other point is, you know, it's just how you have not fixed this offensive line is, to me, criminal, you know, with regards to that.
No, Drew, I will say one thing about the offensive line. They actually have run block this year since the first couple games of the year when it was really bad and they couldn't do anything. But in the last 5 or so games, I think they've actually blocked in the run game better than I've seen in a few years. Now, it does seem, though, whenever you ask Eli to, you know, have to drop back with 5 or 7-step drops on 3rd and long, that they have trouble protecting him. I buy that 100%.
Exactly.
But I still
that's
think you have seen
right
some improvement in the run blocking. But you're right. It's fair.
Right, and that's all I'm saying right there, you know, because, you know, my other thing too, man, is I hate to say it, but I kind of fear for Eli's health, because, I mean, the team is just bad, man. I mean, just really, really bad. So, and then one other thing I'm going to make, and I'm going to get off the air, and I just want to make this right here, okay? You know, I've been reading a lot in the newspaper lately, and this is just the league overall, you know, about how people are protesting the teams. You know, they don't want to, you know, viewership is down. Let me slow down. Viewership is down. And a lot of people were kind of intimating it is over the protest. First and foremost, I don't buy that crap. I don't buy it's over the protest. I will say I 100% unequivocally approve of the protest, and I'm retired military. I did 26 years in the military, so I don't want to hear this laughable stock about disrespecting the military and the flag. People have a right to protest. But I'm not getting on no political tangent here. Here's my point. When you look at a lot of these teams, the product overall is bad, John. Remember, a couple of years ago, I called in and I said the same thing about how I no longer watch a lot of the games no more because they're just bad. It seems like the product is just bad overall. I don't even watch a lot of games. I mean, you know, a lot of games, a lot of team matchups you watch, it's just you're pretty much determined. You already know who won the team. That's how bad the product is. If the NFL wants to up that viewership again, they need to fix the product.
Well, Drew, I would argue, actually, that it's somewhat unpredictable this season, especially because there's a great deal of parity in the NFL.
And thank you, Drew. Appreciate the call.
I appreciate the phone call. I personally like that. I like it when we don't have necessarily one or two dominant teams and you pretty much know who's going to the Super Bowl or the chances are pretty high behind two teams. I think this year, you can make a case for a good four or five in each conference. And while it may not provide for every single game being exciting, and you're not going to get that in any sport, whether it be baseball, hockey, the NBA, you name it. I actually think it helps the league when you have a lot of teams that are grouped together and you don't have a runaway squad. I mean, even New England is not necessarily viewed as a runaway squad this season, and the Eagles are 8-1, but you know, I don't necessarily view the Eagles as a juggernaut because I think they've got a lot of young guys. They lost their starting left tackle, so they have some question marks regardless of how effective they've been.
They haven't even played the Dallas Cowboys yet.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I like that. I personally find that appealing. I like it when you can give me a matchup and I can make a case for both teams.
I do think we've had it's funny. Like, some games, I think Thursday and Monday night, the ratings are actually up this year, believe it or not. But in general, I think the Sunday ratings are down. The reasons for that, I don't know. Could it have something to do with the protests? Maybe. Could it be that more people are watching digitally or in the red zone and not watching traditional TV? That's possible, too.
Which is not reflected in the ratings, which I think is a good point.
Could it be, you know, general quality of play? Where, I mean, look at all the injuries we've had. I mean,
a lot of stars.
Before the year, you're going to go watch a, you know, this is total random. It's not even a fact, but this is an example. Let's say you got the Packers and the Colts scheduled for a Week 11 game here. And you're like, you get Andrew Luck versus Aaron Rodgers. Oh, that's great. You got to sit down and watch Brett Hundley against Jacoby Brissett. I mean, it's not the same.
It takes away from the national appeal to the casual fan. The diehard is probably going to watch, but you're not just looking at the diehard. You're looking at the general fan who may just want to turn on and be entertained for a few hours. Yeah, and you can't anticipate that. You have no idea, but there have been so many stars that have gone down as a result of the injury bug that when they make the schedule up for Monday Night Football, for Thursday Night Football, for Sunday Night Football, they're doing it so far in advance, they're not anticipating that this guy's going to get hurt and that guy's going to get hurt. That's why they have flexing into the schedule so they can make changes accordingly.
All right, Steve in South Carolina, Charlie in Portland, Maine. We're going to leave you guys on hold here. We'll try to get to you at the very end of the show, but I got to get to Sean O'Hara because he's joining us now from his palatial estate in New Jersey. Sean, how are you, buddy?
Hey, what's up, fellas? I'm doing well. How are you guys?
All right, Sean.
We're doing great, man. You got Schmelk and Metal here with you, Sean. I guess let's just start with this. General feel watching this team over the course of the, you know, first half of the year, where you think they're heading. And, you know, Ben McAdoo said yesterday he thought this team has a run in them. If they do, how do you think that happens?
Ooh, you know, listen, I think everybody just is really disappointed. You know, I remember being there in training camp, watching practice and just saying, wow, this team looks really good. I mean, on paper, they certainly look good, but the practices looked crisp. They looked really good down in the red zone. Evan Engram, Brandon Marshall almost looked uncoverable at times.
Yep.
And who would have thought that it was foreshadowing to the fact that the defense couldn't stop anybody? That really, to me, has been the biggest surprise and disappointment this year. Look, the offense has struggled. They struggled last year. You know, I think the last five or six games, they didn't even score 20 points. So they were really bailed out last year by the defense. But when you look at the way that they have lost games this year, they had the lead. You know, this was very reminiscent of Coach Coughlin's last year when they would have the lead. And you know what? This is maybe another debate about the four-minute offense. The offense's job is to not put the defense back on the field. But when you go down, you take the lead, or you do put them on the field, you've got to come up with a stop. And both in Philly and against Tampa Bay, you know, they had a chance to win that game. Defense couldn't come up with a stop. Now, I think you win those two games, I think we're talking about a totally different scenario right now, totally different team. But what we saw this past Sunday, I think, was very, very disappointing. Everybody talks about the effort. Look, I think as a player, you go out there and you're going to play hard, but it's not about Sundays. When you come off of a bye week, when you're playing a team like the Rams that scores points left and right, they put up 40 points, I think, four or five times this year. They led the league in big plays. You've got to have an awareness on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And with extra preparation, there should be no surprises. You shouldn't be surprised by a go screen on 3rd and 33. That's what they do. You shouldn't be surprised by a double move by Sammy Watkins going deep. That's what he does. And that, to me, is where this team lost. They didn't lose the game on Sunday. They lost the game in their preparation mentally. They weren't locked in. They didn't give effort during the week mentally, and the focus wasn't there. It wasn't so much the physical aspect as much as we all saw Eli Apple take a pass on making a tackle, and we saw him not cover anybody on that red zone touchdown to Robert Woods on the crossing route.
Well, I think you brought up an interesting point with respect to effort during the game versus during the course of the week and leading up to the preparation of that, Sean. But, you know, a lot of people are running with the narrative that, you know, maybe this team gave up on the season because of where they are in the standings. You watch a lot of film, Sean. So when you do, though, break down the film, aside from effort, what else were you seeing from a defensive standpoint in terms of why the Rams were so successful? Is it miscues? Is it guys not filling their gaps? You know, if you could best sum up what seems to be the main trend from a defensive perspective.
Yeah, to me, it was. Are you fully committed? You know, we had a saying a few years back as Giants players and Coach Coughlin kind of handed out these little bookmarks, almost, if you will, and it said, with your shield or on it. And basically, it was kind of a, you know, from that movie 300, you know, the us against the world mentality, but it was kind of like an honor code. Hey, look, we're going to battle, and you're either coming home with your shield or on it. That's what I didn't see from the defense. I didn't see them selling out. And to your point, hey, why am I going to risk injury? Why am I going to sell out for this? We're not going anywhere. We're not going to the playoffs. I saw some of that. Now, it's not just one guy. If it was just one person, it's easy to fix. But that becomes contagious. And to me, when you watch the defense play against the Rams, I didn't see guys fighting to get off blocks like their life depended on it. When you turn on film of good teams right now, teams that are winning, teams that are dominating on defense or offense, that are playing for the postseason, boy, they do not stay blocked. In the NFL, look, everybody gets blocked here and there, but you can't stay blocked, and that's what you would see. It's kind of like, oh, hey, I'm getting blocked. I'm not fighting like my life is on the line to get off this block and make the play. It was, I'm going to let somebody else make the tackle. That's disappointing when you look at how much talent is on that field. But the other thing that I saw on that defensive side was, man, they really miss Olivia Vernon, and I think JPP is a totally different pass rusher and a totally different defensive end when he's playing right defensive end as opposed to left defensive end. When he's over on left defensive end and he's on that side, he affects the run game. He's a much better rusher. When he gets to go over there and fill in where OV should be, he's not as dominant as a pass rusher, and I think they really miss OV.
You know, Sean, and we're joined by Sean O'Hara, former Giants offensive lineman, Super Bowl champion. You know, Sean, you mentioned the, you know, not doing everything you can to get off blocks. I think that kind of go back to what Jerry Reese said at his midseason press conference. You can play hard, but that doesn't mean that you have the same type of hunger that you had in maybe past years. And I think it's maybe that little extra something that he saw and is the same thing that you're seeing on the defensive side. But I think you're also seeing, Sean, do you think in the secondary, they allowed, I believe, 6 plays of 30 or more yards to the Rams last week. Is that a matter of bad execution, guys just getting beat? Or are you seeing some of those miscommunication deals back there where guys are kind of looking at each other and pointing like, oh, are you supposed to be there? Am I supposed to be there? What are we doing here exactly?
Yeah, I think what it is, it's a byproduct of not having Janoris Jenkins. You know, it's twofold. It's the communication you're talking about. Hey, look, I'm not used to being over on this side, and I'm not used to playing this coverage. Are we on the same page? When you're at home as a defensive player, now the crowd noise wasn't really that big of a factor in that game, but you've got to make sure the hand signals are appropriate because sometimes it gets loud, and they do that so they're all on the same page. I thought they played a lot more zone coverage, and maybe it was to not give up the big play, but when you play more zone like that, now you put your safeties at risk. And a lot of that, I think if Jenkins had played, they might have gone more man. And, you know, the second factor with why you play zone is when you're down 2 starting linebackers, no Casillas, no B.J. Goodson, Keenan Robinson gets banged up early on, you're trying to protect your linebackers. This defense has been struggling against the tight end. So, you know, the zone coverage, a lot of that is to try to – hey, you've got a second-year young quarterback. If we can get a little pressure, maybe force him to throw a ball and confuse him with the coverage. I saw a lot of that, and it came back to bite the Giants.
Yeah, I want to throw one more thing, and then I'm sure Lance will go to the offensive line with you. one of the quotes you saw from one of the players, I think Landon Collins talked about it, how you like the team to kind of simplify the defense and kind of go more back to that two high safety look that they used a lot last year and they maybe got away from this year. Maybe things have been made a little bit more complicated. Ben McAdoo even made the point where he wants the coach's game plans to be a little bit simpler. My point of contention with that, Sean, is pretty simple. If you can't stop the run like they couldn't earlier in the year and you can't get pressure with your front four, you can't sit there and play two safeties high every play because they're going to run the ball on you and you're not going to put any pressure on the quarterback. And that's kind of forced Steve Spagnuolo, I think, to get more creative because of what the defense hasn't been able to do.
Yeah, when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, they're doing a good job stopping the run so they can play those zone coverage. You can play too high. As an offensive lineman, when I broke the huddle and I saw too high, I know I'm getting six in the box. If we have a run pass alert, I know we're running it. I love it. Give me six in the box all day long. I'm going to wear those linebackers out. That's really what you're faced with. So, look, you can dumb it down. You can simplify it. The bottom line is you've got to execute. Now, for Landon Collins, the crazy thing is I feel like when he was drafted, the one question mark on him was, what is he? You know, because he could come down and thump you. And it was almost like, all right, is this kind of like a Deion Buchanan down in Arizona? He's, you know, he's really a linebacker in a free safety's body, or, you know, can he cover? Last year we saw an unbelievable season from him coverage-wise, making plays, intercepting the ball, returning things for touchdowns. We saw that ball-hawking safety. I don't really think that's who Landon Collins is. Landon wants to come downhill. So single-high safety Landon Collins is, I think, who he really wants to be. So I'm shocked to hear him say he wants to be too high because I don't think he wants to be in coverage. He wants to come downhill.
Talking with former Giants offensive lineman Sean O'Hara, also a member of the Giants broadcast team. And, Sean, one of the things you alluded to was all the injuries that the defense had been dealing with and how Spags has had to shuffle in personnel. And I think the same could be said from an offensive standpoint, given changes on the offensive line, the loss of star wide receivers. Yet everybody always likes to be an evaluator. And a lot of the conversation has been, does Eli Manning have any more gas in the tank? How difficult is it, Sean, to evaluate Eli Manning's performance this season, given all of the things that have changed around him? Or is it fair, regardless of the shuffling in and out of personnel?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about a team that has had more transition around them at almost all the positions.
Yeah,
I mean, wide receiver, offensive line, you know, I can't really think of a team that has had this kind of a loss. I mean, who else loses four receivers in one game? It's just it's unheard of. So it is hard to evaluate Eli. Now, I feel like obviously if Odell Beckham was healthy, you know, this offense would be a little different right now.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing with Brandon Marshall. So those are two factors that you really can't, you really can't sugarcoat. But when I look at Eli in this offense, I just don't see the comfort in his progression because he doesn't trust the pocket. And so many times when you turn on the film and you watch, it's if that first guy's not open, it's like a panic sets in. Like, okay, I know I'm about to get hit. Like, if number one's not open, I saw Jared Goff go, one's not open, how about two? Oh, I'm going to hit three.
Yeah.
There's no time to get to three. Yeah. So when you speed up that clock, that does a couple things. Number one, it makes the ball come out sooner, which – sometimes receivers aren't ready for it. Sometimes you spray the ball. Now, listen, when Eli misses, he misses high. And I think we saw that. He missed a couple throws. That happens. You know, look, as a quarterback, you throw 40 balls, you're going to miss a couple. The tough thing with that is if you've been used to running a certain play and a certain route with Odell Beckham, and now all of a sudden you're throwing it to Tavares King or Roger Lewis or, you know, another, a receiver that you maybe you have run that play 150 times with Odell, you've run it 10 times with another guy, and only once in a game situation. Game speed is different than practice speed. As much as you try to simulate it, that's tough. I mean, that's hitting a moving target that's running at a different speed. It's hard, and I think we heard Eli talk about it after the game. Those are kind of growing pains that comes with that transition. But I thought the Giants ran the ball really well early on. You know, that first drive, Orleans Darkwood was coming downhill. I think they kind of shocked the Rams even at how physical they were up front, and, you know, they ran a couple traps, tried to take Aaron Donald out of the game. But, you know, they do that, and it's almost like I sit back and I say, okay, here comes the pass, because even if they get 7 yards on a run, they're coming right back to the pass, and that's really where I think this offense kind of struggles.
Yeah, you know, Sean, it's funny. You kind of led the perfect segue for my next question. The way the Giants are trying to play now seems like an offense that you would love to play in. They're trying to run the ball They're trying to get into reasonable third down and distance. And frankly, I think in the last four or five games, they've probably run the ball better than they have in a few years. Do you think it's A, Orleans Darko being quicker to the line and just taking one cut and hitting it? Is it, you know, Fluker and Brett Jones being added to the interior of the line that's doing a better job run blocking? Why do you think the run game has gotten better the way it has the last few games?
Well, I definitely think they've been more physical at the point of attack. No doubt about it. DJ Fluker is a much better run blocker than John Jerry. He's a downhill guy. Now, change of direction is not his forte. So you've got to help him. And that's really where I was kind of scratching my head. That first sack by Aaron Donald with the forced fumble, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't be sliding that way. I remember back in the day when we used to play Chris Jenkins, when he was a complete monster down in Carolina, we said, look, I don't care what hash we're on, we're going to slide right. Whatever the protection, whatever hash we were on, that dictated the protection that Coach Gilbride would call because he knew, look, we've got to slide. We're not going to put our guards one-on-one with Chris Jenkins. Why would you do that with Aaron Donald? Why would you even let him be one-on-one with DJ Fluker? That's just not smart. So those type of things kind of had me scratching my head. You know, I think you've got to be smart about how you handle those things. But the run game has certainly been better. I think Brett Jones has done a really good job in at center. His ability to just continue to get moving, whether it's a back block or it's at the point of attack, the combination blocks look a little better. I like John Jerry as a pulling guard. He's done a pretty good job with that. But the other guy that I've got to give credit to is I think Rhett Ellison's really, you know, he's really absorbed this offense now, and he looks so much more confident in his blocking. Tight ends, you've got to give them reps. So we talk about continuity with the O-line. I mean, you've got to give these tight ends more reps in this run game. And when Rhett gets his face in the block and when he wants to, he can really move guys. So he's helped.
Sean, you brought up Brett Jones, and Weston Richburg was recently placed on injured reserve, and he's a pending free agent. When it comes to the Giants, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but at least moving forward in the offseason, what are some of the things that they're going to have to evaluate and consider? Because, you know, Brett Jones has been making quite an impact since he was inserted in at center. It's a position you played. So, you know, what does the dialogue become about, well, this is what Richburg brings to the table. This is what a guy from the Canadian Football League brings to the table. You know, how do you go about evaluating that to determine what you want to do moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think cost is certainly a big factor, and that's really where the Giants are. It's going to be interesting to see with both Pugh and with Richburg, you know, what kind of market is there. And that's, you know, all it takes is one suitor to come out and throw a big offer. And even if you want to keep the guy, you may not be able to fit him under the cap. So I'm shocked that both Pugh and Richburg haven't been re-signed in some way, shape, or form. I thought, you know, one of the things you do is that when you approach these guys early on and you extend them early on, you kind of save yourself. The longer you wait, the more it can cost you. So, you know, the Richburg thing was really curious to me. I was shocked that he went on IR for a number of reasons. You know, number one, you know, what happens if something happens to Brett Jones? You know, now your center is Jalapio. You know, I don't like that move. You know, the thing with Richburg, I mean, if he really couldn't play and it was really a health issue, then I get it if that was what you had to do. But, you know, it's a shame because Brett Jones and Richburg are both really good centers. One of them would have to play guard if you wanted to keep both of them as a starting five. But I think for Richburg, look, he started a lot of football. I thought a couple years ago, you know, he was really showing a lot of potential and, you know, had a shot if he kept trending upward at being in the, you know, making a Pro Bowl. I don't know if this offense is the best offense for him. You know, I don't know if that's, you know, something that he's thinking about. But, you know, for him right now and for Justin Pugh, they've done most of the work now. And the fact that they're not re-signed now, it doesn't hurt anything to kind of wait and see what free agency brings. But as an organization, I think everybody kind of hears what's going on in the future. I mean, who knows what's going on and what's happening. So if you are a guy that's going to be at the end of the contract at the end of the year, you're kind of like Kirk Cousins. I'm going to wait and see and see how all this plays out.
Sean, real quick, final question. In the past, you have been critical of Eric Flowers and understandable his play, especially the first two games this year against Ezekiel Ansah and DeMarcus Lawrence. He had some issues. But the last few games, I mean, they really haven't had a lot of pressure off his side. I know they've chipped a little bit on that side and things like that, but do you think you're seeing some fundamental improvement from him on what he's doing on the offensive line, doing a better job protecting Eli Manning's blind side?
I've seen some big strides, John. And look, I feel bad for Ereck Flowers at times because he has just kind of become the whipping boy. You know, a tight end would give up a sack and they'd say, well, that's probably on Flowers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of become the narrative here.
Yeah.
So it's not always just, and it's not always fair. But look, when you're drafted ninth overall, I mean, higher than Odell Beckham was drafted, the expectation is high and the bar is high. And he has not come close to what you would expect from a ninth overall pick. But to answer your question, he has looked so much better. There's two things that jump out at me. He's done a much better job with his hands and with his punch. He's trusting it. And really that confidence to me stems from he's so much more authoritative in his footwork with his pass sets. It used to be that he wouldn't kick as much and his feet didn't look alive. I don't know if it was coming off the bye, he felt fresh, but this was the best I've seen him in his pass sets. In his pass pro, and he's really strung together some nice games here. I'd like to see him be a little more physical in the run game. I'd like to see him kind of drive his feet on contact. He's such a big, strong guy, and for such a big guy that I know he pushes a lot of weight in the weight room. I know he's strong. I've talked to guys about it. He stops his feet on contact, and he doesn't drive through anybody, and that is just kind of something that becomes a learned behavior, and it's something that can be fixed.
Sean, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and hopefully we're going to see you around the facility pretty soon, bud.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah, I'm going to swing by, man. I got to get a free meal one of these days.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, thanks, folks.
And, all right, Sean. And we're going to go enjoy a free meal very quickly. Dave Dominic, I know you want to wrap the show, but I've had two callers on hold. I got to get them in real quick, all right? Steve in South Carolina has been patient. Steve, I'm going to ask you to be quick, but make your points real fast, and then we'll respond, okay?
Okay, thanks, guys.
No problem.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm glad I called today because the topic's been mostly McAdoo. I want to say yesterday at that press conference is the most humble and confident that I've seen him be as a head coach yet. And I do appreciate that. I see a change in him. And my question is that I'm a chef owner of a restaurant. I work in a very tough industry. I found over the last several years that you can no longer blanket manage people. You literally have to individually manage each individual.
You're right about
to their
that.
Needs and to cater to their needs. And my question is do you think that McAdoo possesses that talent to be able to individually coach each person rather than blanket coach?
Well, I think that's a challenge, and I don't necessarily disagree with your take. I think in life a lot, you've got to be careful in terms of how you handle individuals. But when you're talking about a team, you know, you have to then come back with the question, does a head coach have the time to actually be able to do that for all 53 players? And I think that's...
I work 70 hours a week dedicated to this restaurant, and I have to find the time in order for my team to be able to produce. I have to reach them on an individual basis.
Well, that's why I think, though, if you look at the parallel of what goes on in a kitchen versus what goes on in a football team, and I think there are some similarities, but that's
very
why
much.
A young head coach and even an experienced head coach, I think Steve has to lean on his coaching staff to give that individual teaching. I think it's a lot to ask for one guy to go around and make sure that he's catering to 53 different players. I think that's where your coordinators,
true,
your individual coaches come in.
You know, even if it's small things.
And I think
thank
you got
to
pick your points
and
appreciate the phone call. But I think that to do that on a daily basis is a lot, especially when there are so many other responsibilities. And that's why it's a matter of a head coach trusting his staff and saying, hey, we need to focus on this player within this meeting room. We need to give him a little bit more attention so that we can up his game. I don't think there's anything wrong with
that. And by the way, he mentioned that Ben McAdoo seemed humble, and I think it's a great point. And there was a report yesterday from Benjamin Albright, who's I think he's out in Denver. He covers the NFL. He does a talk show out there. I'm not going to read his whole report because I don't buy it, quite frankly, and I don't know who his source is, and I don't know what he's saying is not true. But one quote, if he said from a Giants source, that Ben McAdoo is, quote-unquote, only out for himself. What does that mean?
How is a head coach only out
for himself? You can't win games
without
if the players
team.
Don't play well.
Yeah.
So how are you only out for yourself? And does Ben McAdoo seem like a guy that enjoys being in the spotlight and being me, me, me? He would like nothing more than never do a press conference and just coach football. That doesn't make a lick of sense.
Well, that's
that part of the report. That's all I'm going to say.
That's fair. I think with any report like that or anything that's brought up on Twitter, you need a little bit more detail to connect the dots there.
Well, now we have 280 characters. Remember, let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. I'll make it quick.
Yeah, please.
I know you guys got to go have some lunch.
Thanks for prioritizing.
You take the coach of the L.A. Rams. The guy is a communicator. He, they were talking about it during the game. He meets with all his players. He finds out about them. He talks to every one of them. They love the guy. Todd Bowles is another guy who the players like. He can communicate to the players. McAdoo, to me, he's trying to create a persona and not really being himself.
Yeah, but Charlie, I'll say this real quick. Based on how you see Todd Bowles talking to the media, he doesn't look like Captain Communicator either. McAdoo's like with the players? That's my point. If you don't know what Bowles is like with the players,
two players who went off the record and told us what it's like to be with McAdoo. I mean, that was pretty damning. When you have players saying this guy's fining everybody, he's running us into the ground on Saturdays, and then we're going to hop on a plane.
Charlie, by the way, I want to say something about one thing, all right? These players don't do anything on Fridays. They basically get massages and get to relax, okay? And then on Saturday, each unit runs 14 plays at way less than 100%. If that's running these players into the ground, what the hell were we doing 10 years ago? It's a load of garbage. They're doing less than they did 3 or 4 years ago when they were winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, but what these players are saying is that he switched the day off. They should be doing maybe that on a Friday, give them their day off on a Saturday. Then they're jumping on a plane going to God knows where. All I'm saying is that he seems to be trying to create this tough guy, this tough coach, and instead of just being himself. And, you know, when he slicked his hair back, he's trying to change his persona. And that's the problem. They don't buy into him. They don't think he's real. And the thing is, after this 51-17 loss, which I kind of predicted, it's over. We don't have to wait to San Francisco. I mean, when you have a bye and you have 2 weeks to prepare and we're supposed to flush everything down the toilet and we're supposed to have self-examinations and you come out and you play like that, that's got to go on the coach, too, of preparation. Just like Sean said, so many really things that I believe that he said about, you know, what is going on.
But Charlie, he praised Eric Flowers.
He leaves that part out. He's got to go, and I think he will go. And I feel sorry for the guy, but he hasn't stepped up to the plate. He really hasn't.
How about Sean O'Hara praising your man Eric Flowers, though? How about that?
Yeah, well, he didn't say he was a great left tackle. If you ask Sean,
he's going to spit that. Yeah,
he's on the right side.
That's right. Charlie, I love the fact that you pick and choose what you want to put substance and stock in behind what Sean O'Hara says. It's remarkable. At least he's consistent, so I got to give him that.
Great job for the callers. Couldn't do it without you. Fantastic job. You carry the show. We appreciate it. For Lance Butler, I'm John Schmoke. Tomorrow, Schmelk and Dottino. Back with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a great day, everybody. Enjoy.
Have a good one.